Since March 2007, one online audio production group has pushed the boundaries.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents Maudlin.
It's sounding board. Audio drama with Lumpy Bits.
You have been listening to Jake Sampson.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents
My name is Feedback, and these are my stories.
Last time on Gaia's Voyages.
This is the Broken Sea Audio production of Escape from New York.
OTR Swag Cast.
Doctor Who, starring Mark Telita as the Doctor.
BrokenSea.com. New audio every Thursday.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
Escape was Radio's leading anthology series of high adventure, airing on CBS from July 7, 1947 to September 25, 1954. Enjoy the show.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to an island off the northwest coast of Africa, and the story of a man whose quest for happiness was blocked by a giant, a madman, and a beautiful girl, as Willard Kaufman tells it in his exciting story, The Gladiator.
And now Scarletti fouls his advantage with a right cross on the victim's heart. Then a left to the chin, and a right. And on the right. Oh, a wizard of a smash to McNabb's jaw, and the Pride of Scotland is down. He's down. The referee motions Scarletti to a neutral corner and begins counting.
One, two, three, four.
I sat there in a neutral corner, not realizing it was over. This was it, Joe. I had to tell myself this was it. After 12 years in the scrambled brains business, 12 years of living like a monk and dying before each fight, this was it. And then I saw her. Dark she was, and pliantly slender. The most beautiful girl I'd ever seen. She sat there among the ringside bloodsuckers with the arc lights on her white face. As calm and incurious as a queen. Even a cold shower couldn't get her out of my mind. I don't know why. Her hair was the color of night, and she wore a diamond in it, like a star, when only one is shining in the sky. And now I'd never see her again.
Joe!
If I had any guts at all, I'd have gone to her as I left the ring. I'd have said, "You're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen." I'd have said, "What's your name? What are you doing here?"
Joe!
What? Oh, yeah, Pawnee.
You can climb out of the shower now. Newspaper guys have gone.
You got rid of them real fast, huh?
It was a snap. Nobody's interested in a retired heavyweight champion. Not even on his first night of retirement.
Well, that's the way I want it. For the rest of my life.
Hey, here's your rope, Joe.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, a little peeved, the sports writers. They thought you'd stick around London for a while instead of tearing off to Rome.
Yeah, we got the plane tickets.
Yeah, and an hour to make the plane, so please don't...
Good evening, gentlemen. May a stranger congratulate you on your splendid victory.
Thanks, bud, but now if you just...
My name is Verini. Julius Verini.
Yeah, well, it's nice knowing you. But we're sort of in a hurry.
May I introduce my niece? Come in, my dear. Lucrezia.
Hello.
Hello.
I thought I'd never see you again.
Where did you see me before?
In the ring. I mean, when I was in the ring. Oh. I thought you were the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen.
Hey, Joe, we better get going. We're missed connections.
Mr. Scarletti, I wonder if you and your manager would consent to be my guest on your trip to Rome. I assure you no public conveyance could be as pleasant as the one I offer. Eh, Lucrezia?
When there are certain compensations about his senior.
Thanks a lot, but we couldn't impose on you.
But I insist, my dear sir. Mr. Scarletti, you see, I am a student of the boxing. I should enjoy talking with you. I should be honored playing host to the greatest of all champions.
I'm sorry, Mr. Verinius, but...
Mr. Verinius, we'd be delighted to go.
Yeah, but Joe...
Your niece won't mind.
I would love having you.
Splendid. I'll have your baggage picked up at the airport. I can't tell you what a pleasure it will be for my niece and me.
The pleasure is all mine.
But I just do not understand. You had success. You were famous and... And you gave it up. I would never have given it up.
You know, I like the way you dress. You fit into it nice.
You sound like a kid on his first date.
Well, in a way, I am. See, I've never been this close to a nice girl before.
I'm not so nice, Joe. And you're not so close.
Well, I can get closer.
No, Joe.
Yeah, 3 days on the water, 3 nights under the stars.
You sound absolutely new. Like number one on the hit parade.
And it's still no Joe.
Don't rush me. You have plenty of time.
Yeah, plenty of time to make up for all...
You're like a spring all wound up.
I've been wound up for 12 years.
But wind down. Talk a little. Talk it out.
Talk. That's kid stuff.
Oh, you don't know anything about kids. I don't believe you ever were a kid.
No, I guess I wasn't. The night of my 17th birthday, I had my 17th fight. That's some coincidence, huh?
Why cry about it? You're still young.
Yeah, I'm 29. Days are going fast, and what have I got to show for them?
Oh, nothing. Nothing except the satisfaction and the wealth and the fame of being the greatest fighter in the world.
And that world was pretty narrow. A ring 20 feet square surrounded by rope.
You're the first man since Fitzsimmons to hold the light heavyweight and the heavyweight championship at the same time.
Hey, how do you know so much about fighting?
Oh, I don't. I'm just quoting.
Speak for yourself. Tell me about yourself. Or is that kid stuff, too?
No, but... There's nothing to tell.
Oh, there must be. I mean, who are you? Do you live in Rome or Paris or neither or both? How does it feel to be rich when you don't have to fight for it?
Well, you see, I would rather talk about you.
Lucrezia, why are you so upset?
I'm not upset.
Joe, I gotta see.
Hey, where are your manners, Pony? You're interrupting.
Oh, that's all right. Joe, I'll see you later.
Lucrezia,
Joe. Something fishy about this whole lasher.
What?
Listen to me, Joe. It's about this joke of Verinius.
Oh, what about it?
He's a stranger. He talks all the time about fighters like most guys talk about dames.
Can't stop him from talking.
And he looks at you like a crazy. Like a butcher fixing a carve up a prize bull.
Can't stop him from looking either.
All right. But remember the dressing room 3 nights back? When you said we'd go with him? And he said he'd pick up our gear at the airport?
So?
So how did he know our gear was at the airport? How did he know we was going to Rome?
You told the sports writers. Maybe you read it somewhere.
I told him a couple of minutes before Verinius popped up. But that's not all. Joe, get your mind off that dame and listen.
All right, I'm listening.
Well, I've been trying to brush him all day. And on a little boat like this, it ain't easy, even in his car. 10 minutes ago, he almost cornered me, so I took off. Up that stairway.
A ladder. Aboard ship, you call it a ladder.
All right, so I go up, like the second floor.
Now, the bridge.
Will you stop interrupting? I mosey around, and I happen to notice a big map.
That's a chart. They mark our course on it, day by day.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I almost fall down. Joey, we ain't going to Rome.
What?
To go to Rome, we should have turned left at the Rock of Gibraltar. That's how you get to what you call the Mediterranean Sea.
And we didn't?
We kept going south. Right now, we're somewhere off Africa. What do we do, Joey?
We'd better talk to Varenius.
Hey, you might as well start talking. Here he comes.
Ah, there you are. I've been looking for you.
Varenius,
call me Julius. You are enjoying the trip. You are comfortable.
Well, a matter of fact...
Splendid. You look marvelous, Joe. You've never looked better.
No? What makes you so sure? You never saw me till 3 days ago.
That's where you are wrong. I've known you a long time, Joe. Since the night you defeated Jackie Slade at the Polo Grounds in your native New York.
What? Well, that was 9, 10 years ago.
10. 10 years, 5 and a half months. When you walked in the ring that night, you were just another preliminary boy. When you walked out, I knew you would be champion. Of all the bouts I have ever seen, that is the one I most enjoy remembering.
Well, that's the fight I'd like most to forget.
When you hit Slade in the second round, a magnificent punch. He was in the hospital 3 weeks.
He almost died. I wanted to give up fighting for good.
But why?
Because I don't like hurting people. I don't like to kill.
You don't like hurting? That is very funny.
Here's something funnier than that. Why aren't we going to Rome?
I hate noise. But I suppose the klaxon is necessary in the farm.
Come on, quit stalling, Varenius.
My dear Joe, I never stall. I certainly wouldn't try to now, when you're obviously so sure of what you're talking about.
Where are we going?
Home. Home. With me. Accuse me of selfishness, if you like. But I so much enjoy playing host to you that I thought I'd prolong the pleasure. Perhaps I should have consulted you about it, but you would not have accepted. Would you?
I would not.
You see? But, of course, we cannot turn back now.
Why not?
Because I have this gun. And it is loaded. And as I know very little about firearms, it might go off and hurt you. I would not want that to happen, though. It would interfere with my plans.
No? What plans are those?
Something I've thought about for 10 years, since the night of the Polo Grounds. I'll tell you all about it sometime soon, but now, if you'll head down that passageway, you'll find a small but comfortable brig ready to receive you. Let's go.
Some pleasure cruise this turns out to be. And all because you fall for a dame with slow gin eyes and a diamond in her hair. Some fast shuffle you got from her Uncle Julius. So, what are you going to do about it?
You're my manager, you tell me.
I'll tell you this much. We got to do something, even if it's wrong.
What can we do? Uncle Julius has got 4 aces and a gun. I got 4 walls and I got bars on the door.
I'll tell you what I got. I got a mad on that dame worse than I got on her Uncle Julius. If I ever lay hands on either of them, I'll...
Laisse-moi!
What's that?
Laisse-moi, je dis! Laisse-moi! Laisse-moi!
Well, if it ain't the dame with the slow gin eyes.
Yeah. Varenius must have flipped to lock up his ever-loving niece. Now listen, baby, you better give it to us straight. What's this all about?
I don't know. I saw him pull that gun on you, so I go to him, I say, what kind of business is this? I say this is not my deal.
What deal?
Likely story.
I swear. Practical jokes are okay, darling, but not with a gun. Don't be angry with you.
That's what you get for talking back to your Uncle Julius.
He's not my Uncle Julius.
He must have disowned him.
I never saw him till a week ago. He comes in this club in Paris where I'm singing. He offered me £20,000 to go to London with him. Just for the weekend, he said. To play a practical joke on two friends.
Well, if we're the friends, I wonder how he treats his enemy.
I'm afraid we're going to find out.
Well, let's find out now.
But how?
Corny, get that tin basin over there.
Basin?
Yeah, get it. All right, Lucretia, take off his shoe.
Shoe?
Yeah, do what I say. Now, when I start rattling the door, you start banging away at the bulkhead.
Oh, I get you.
All right, are you ready? Okay, let's go.
All right. Now, what do you want?
We want you should tell us a story.
Where are we going? And why?
You are asking for the story of my life.
Then tell it. Come on in and tell it.
No, thank you. I'll tell it on this side of the bar. Does the name of Vereneus mean anything to you?
Nothing.
Once I knew a lightweight called Speedy Vereneus. He was a bum, too.
Yes. Is there any constant loser? But the greatest loser of all is Publius Vereneus. He was commander-in-chief of the Roman Imperial Army 2,000 years ago. He was sent to put down the revolt of Spartacus the Deadly.
That's tough.
Publius returned to Rome in disgrace. He was ostracized. Consigned to a tiny island in the farthest rim of the Roman Empire. That's where he went with his wife and his slaves and his gold. That's where he lived. And so did his son. And their son. That's where I live today. That is where we're going.
You expect us to believe that?
If you wish. Tomorrow, you will see for yourself.
All right, then, for tonight, we'll let it pass. Now for the second question.
Why are you going there? I did, fellow.
You're going there to fight.
You're going for the hardest fight of your life.
Oh, so that's it. Well, let me tell you, Buster. Joe will belt the ears off any bum you put in a ring with him.
There won't be any ring, pony.
He'll cold cock your bum in any round your name.
There won't be any round.
Joe will kill him!
Or Joe himself might be killed. You see, pony, this fight will be to the death.
We got there the next night. A little island and a mantle of fog that hung solid as grease over land and sea. The dock gave way to a worn stone path, and suddenly out of the fog an enormous structure appeared with towers and battlements plunging so high they were lost in the gloom.
Look at this. Like a castle or something.
Not as big as Radio City, but almost.
You like it, Joe?
I'd like it better if you'd keep that cannon out of my spine.
I apologize, Joe, but I cannot chance your escaping the fog. The fog is most forgettable. Usually the view from here is magnificent.
Yeah. On a clear day, you can see Catalina.
Or at least the African mainland. I admire your talent for jokes in so strange a situation.
The situation's impossible. You kidnapped me to kill or be killed for your amusement. And now you regret that the view is not up to par.
You're shocked, Joe, simply because my values differ from yours.
Well, that's a mild way of putting it.
You're shocked because you might die for my amusement.
Death is not amusing. Where I come from.
Where you come from. I assure you I am equally shocked by the values of your world.
At least we've gone a couple of thousand years from barbarism.
You've gone from barbarism to decadence without touching civilization.
We don't kill men for amusement.
I often wonder what you kill them for. Yet the killing goes on, year after year. What's war but mass murder?
All right, but basically our way of life...
Basically you have no way of life. You have a culture of gadgets, to which no one has contributed anything of value since the Romans invented the bathtub.
Oh, don't argue with me, Joe. It is getting us nowhere.
Right, right, my dear. Anyway, this is as far as I go.
What's on the other side of the wall?
You'll find out. As soon as I find the key. Here it is. Inside. This is it.
and make yourself at home.
I am your slave.
Yeah. Or vice versa. The iron door swung shut and we were in an ancient Roman village. The stone wall surrounding us must have been 8 feet thick and about four times as high, and notched along the top with saw teeth. Mud huts crouching in the soupy night formed an irregular circle around the deserted marketplace. Just like those pictures in a first-year Latin book. Only Uncle Julius had tricked up the joint with a few of the modern gadgets he so much despised.
Look, Joe. On top of the wall, between the notches.
Yeah. Machine gun. Searchlight.
Not every 50 yards. Like a concentration camp.
Joy. What are we gonna do?
You keep asking me that.
But you keep ducking the answer.
I don't know. Maybe we ought to dig up some local talent. Maybe we could talk to them.
What do you suppose they speak?
Maybe Latin. You know any Latin?
A pig Latin, I know. I could talk it like a native when it was the thing around Jacob's Beach. What's that? Joey. Look at him.
I looked at the man who came out of the fog. His face was scarred, and his shoulders were like a pair of shovels, and great welts of muscle shifted when the shovels moved under the thin toga. One of his hands was curved like half a watermelon around what seemed to be a lash, a double strip of rawhide studded with iron spikes. He was the biggest man I ever saw.
You are Scarlatti? I am Crixus.
Nice to meet you.
I come from Caesar.
Caesar?
Caesar Varinius. He talked to me a long time. Explain to Scarlatti, he say. Answer questions, tell him what to expect. I tell you what to expect in one word.
What is the word, Crixus?
Death.
Anyway, he speaks English.
Death is the same in any tongue.
What makes you so sure I'll die?
Because tomorrow in the combat, I kill you.
Well, you look like the kid who could do it.
Caesar say to show you this.
Now, what is it? A lash?
It is Cestus, the gauntlet. You wear it, so. One in each hand with the leather thongs tied to the arm, and the iron studs over the knuckles.
What a weapon.
You fight with me?
Of course.
Yeah, but what if Joe don't want to fight?
Those who will not fight are killed by the guns.
And there is no way out? No way to escape?
Three men tried in last few months, and two last year.
They were killed by the guns?
They were killed by the gladiators.
But why?
You see, would be difficult for Caesar if a slave escaped and talked. So Caesar has made it difficult for all of us. He wired the island with enough explosive to blow it off the earth. If a slave escapes, Caesar touches a button, and whoa! It is the end of us all. He's very clever, Caesar.
Crixus, how many gladiators are there here?
Once 120. Now me. And you.
How many men on the guns?
12 guns on the wall. 24 men. Each gun is placed to cover all the others. Clever.
But they're about 50 yards apart. A man might slip between them in the fog.
There are searchlights.
What do you think, Joe?
The fog, Pony. The lights are useless in the fog.
Yeah, but how can we climb the wall?
Crixus, each gladiator had a pair of these gauntlets, right?
Of course.
Where are they now?
In that chest over there.
And it's locked.
Of course. I have the key.
Well, come on, open it, Crixus.
Why?
Look, we'll tie them together and make a rope with a loop on one end. We'll swing the loop over a notch on top of the wall.
No, Scarlatti. No, Not while I am here.
You would rather fight than be free?
I kill Scarletti tomorrow, I am free. Caesar has said it.
And if you don't kill me, you'll be dead.
Huh? I kill you like a fly.
As long as Joe, this jerk's lined up with the Lennies, I hate to think of tomorrow.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to tangle with him tonight.
What you say, Scarletti?
Nothing, Crixus.
Just this?
Boy, you sure clobbered.
All right, let's find that key. Now, here it is. Come on.
Yeah.
All right, Pony, now take these gauntlets and tie him up. Tie him up good.
He'll never get out.
Use one for a gag.
Right.
Tie him tight, Joe. You think they will hold?
I don't know, baby. But in about 10 minutes, we're going to find out.
I missed the first try, but the second, caught and held. And I went up, hand over hand. And then the rope tightened below me as Lucretia and Pony began to climb. The machine gun was about 60 feet away somewhere beyond the fog. But the whistling of the gunner was a guide. Foghorn. All right. Now down the other side.
Hey, what's that?
Gregsus!
He must have bit through the leather gag.
Yeah.
The alarm!
Come on, run for the boat. There's the boat, Lucretia. Come on. Just a little further. All right. Cast off, Pony.
Not just yet. Put up your hand.
Not this time, Perennius.
Stay back. I kill all of you.
Maybe one of us, but one of us will get you.
Stay back. Stay back, I...
Joe. Joe, are you hurt?
No, not much. Get aboard.
Have you hurt you much, Joe? Your wound?
No.
Look, Joe. The sun. The fog is gone. There's the African coast.
Yeah? Look over there, you see? The island of Varinius.
Joe! There is smoke coming from it!
The island! Look at it!
Oh, Joe, he did! He blew it up! The whole island! And himself, too.
Yeah? Few hours, the water won't even be muddy out there.
Joe?
Yeah?
There's only one thing wrong with this whole lineship.
What is that, boy?
Nobody's gonna believe any part of this now.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you The Gladiator by Millard Kaufman, starring Bill Conrad. Featured in the cast were Lou Krugman, Ted Osborne, and Lillian Byath, with Paul Frees and Byron Kane. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Thank you.
presenting the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon. For the benefit of those who may not have heard the earlier episode, here is the story to date. Flash Gordon, internationally famous American athlete, his beautiful American sweetheart, Dale Arden, and Dr. Zarkov, a great scientist, left the Earth on a rocket ship. They crashed on the planet Mongo and were captured by Ming the Merciless, the cruel emperor of Mongo, who commanded Dale Arden to marry him and ordered that Flash be killed. But Flash escaped. Through the help of Emperor Ming's beautiful daughter, Aura, who fell deeply in love with him and proposed marriage. This Flash refused, saying he loved Dale Arden. Flash then met Thune, the powerful, huge, bearded prince of the Lion Men, and Prince Baron, a former member of Emperor Ming's court. Joined by Dr. Zarkov, these four friends plotted to overthrow the government of Emperor Ming and rescue Dale Arden. They were almost successful, but at the last moment, with victory practically within their grasp, were recaptured by Emperor Ming's soldiers, and the four friends, together with Dale Arden, were condemned to a fate far worse than death. Securely bound, they were placed on a gyro ship and sent as slaves to the prison city of Hawkmen. Now we continue the story. The prison ship carrying our friends roars through the stratosphere on the way to the prison city of the Hawkmen. In a cell room, Flash and Prince Thune work feverishly on each other's bonds.
Can you get the knot untied, Prince Thune?
It is almost loosened, Flash. Just another twist. There. Thou art free.
Thanks. Now I'll set you free. If we work fast, we may be able to release Zarkov and Baron and get control of the ship.
Good. As soon as thou canst loose my bonds, I will help thee capture the guard and take his keys when he makes his rounds.
There. The rope's undone.
Hark. I hear the guard approaching.
Put your hands behind your back like this and lie still until he bends over to give us food. Then we'll overpower him. All right, now. Here he comes.
Here is your food, prisoners.
Now, friend Thune.
What? There! I have him fast.
Take his keys.
Stop squirming, fellow. I'll give you something to squirm about.
Now, I've got his keys, Thune. Now to save Dale, Baron, and Zarkov.
Look out! Be careful! Be careful! What was that?
We must have struck something. Are you all right, Thune?
Yes. And thou, friend?
I'm okay.
Flash! Flash Gordon!
Here! Prince Thune and I are in here. And you are free!
Yes. And how didst thou gain thy liberty, friend?
The crash broke the lock on our cell door. Come quickly. We must go to the control cabin and see about the girl. Yes, hurry. This way. Dale! Where are you? Dale!
I'm here!
Are you all right, Dale?
Curse you, girl. Let go of me. I've got to call Ming on the space phone.
Send this to Ming with my regards.
He won't be able to transmit your message for quite some time, lad.
Let's get out of here.
Let the others go soon. I need your great strength to help me remove the valuable scientific apparatus from the ship.
Come, Flash. Come, Dale. We have no time to lose.
We're with you, Baron.
Soon. Wrench those spacecrafts from their sockets. I will take this space compass.
What else wouldst thou like to have removed, friend?
That is enough for this trip. Come on outside.
Where are our friends, Baron and Flash and Dale?
They must have gone into the forest over yonder. What is that rushing sound?
By the great god, Tao. Look up there. Hawkmen! Run, friends! Run for your life!
Yes. Pennants flying, lances held in readiness, a squadron of savage Hawkmen hurtle from the skies. They seize Thune and Zarkov and sweep them into the air. While in the forest, numb with horror, Flash, Dale, and Baron watch their friends carried away toward a city suspended in space, the prison city of Hawkmen. There they go with Thune and Zarkov.
And that, friend, is the end of them.
What do you mean, Prince Baron?
No man captured to the Hawkmen has lived to tell about it.
How terrible.
You'll see about that, Baron.
It's hopeless, Flash. Look, their city drifts high in the heavens, held up by powerful light beams.
What are we going to do now?
Let's go back to the wrecked ship. We may be able to fix it.
I'm afraid the ship is beyond repair, Flash. But perhaps it won't do any harm to see.
Flash, I see a rushing sound.
Why, it's a rocket ship bearing down on us.
It's going to land.
It made a perfect landing. I wonder who the pilot is.
A girl is getting out. She's holding a ray pistol.
Why, it's Princess Aura. Well, Princess, this is a surprise.
I followed you to give you your last chance, Flash Gordon.
What do you mean? Keep out of this day, Larsen. He knows what I mean.
I suppose you still want me to marry you.
Yes. Marry me and the Empire is yours. And your friends go free.
And if I refuse?
The Hawkmen, with my aid, will kill all of you. You shall never marry this Earth girl, Dale Arden.
My dear Princess, if I must make a choice, I choose Dale and death.
Death, darling.
Good for you, Flash.
You have signed our death warrant. I don't care as long as we are together.
I'm glad, Dale. That's just how I feel, too.
Very well. You have made your choice. I go to the Hawkmen.
Well, there goes the haughty beauty. In an hour, every Hawkman in Mungo will be after us.
Prince Baron's prophecy comes true. He, Flash, and Dale are captured by the Hawkmen and dragged before the throne of their king, mighty Voltan. There the prisoners find Aura leaning on the arm of the great throne, while King Voltan explains to her,
The laws of Mungo allow you to judge the fate of one of these prisoners, Princess. The others belong to me.
I will take the yellow-haired youth. Make him pay for scorning me. Incidentally, by torturing him, I can also torture the Earth girl.
So be it. Take the man to the torture chamber.
No, no, I beg you, kill me, but spare Flash.
But let the girl stay with me. So, you're in love with his youth, eh?
In love with him? Why, just because I begged for Flash's life doesn't mean I love him.
No.
He's but a youth. You, impressive majesty, you are a man.
Ah, my pretty bird, you have discernment. I took you at your face value, but I see I was wrong. You have an unusual appreciation of men.
Thank you, impressive majesty. I can also appreciate compliments.
Soon I shall show you how your friends have failed to stand the rigors of the torture chamber.
I don't care much for torture, Your Majesty, but I guess you can't help doing what the Emperor's daughter tells you to do.
Emperor's daughter? I give orders in this city, but now it's to your fate.
Yes, Impressive Majesty.
I shall make you my wife as soon as the High Priest can be summoned.
In the meantime, down in the torture chambers, Flash and his friends have been put to work stoking the great atom furnaces of the Hawkmen. Driven nearly mad by the terrible heat and the anxiety of wondering what is happening to Dale, Flash is all for rebelling. He throws a shovel full of flaming radium at a guard. The captain of the guard reaches for the switch, which will electrocute Flash by passing the current through a wire fastened to his leg iron. But Dr. Zarkov rushes up and pleads,
Do not kill him, Captain. He is but an impetuous youth. We will make him work.
Then see that he does. If he starts any more trouble, he shall die.
Thank you, Captain.
Get back to work, the rest of you slaves.
Thanks, Dr. Zarkov, but I just as soon die. Dale's lost him.
Patience, Flash. Zarkov and I have a plan. Come over here, behind this lead wall.
What are you going to do, Baron?
I shall keep watch for the guards. Get to work, Zarkov. Quickly, here, lad. Break these wires off your manacles and wrap them around your shovel.
All right. There. Now what are you going to do?
You heard what the captain said. If you start any more trouble, he will electrocute you. When I give you a signal, jump up and throw your shovel into that radium bin over there.
And get myself killed for it?
I promise you, you will not die. Do as I tell you.
All right. Now?
Is the coast clear, Barry?
No one is looking this way.
Now, Flash.
Come on, men. Follow me. Better death than slavery.
Mutiny. Then die like a rat.
Here goes the switch!
Electric current ignited the radium all.
It worked! It worked!
Now's our chance to escape. I'm going to find Dale.
Back in the sumptuous quarters of Voltan, King of the Hawkmen, he and Dale are awaiting the arrival of the High Priest to perform the marriage ceremony.
Well, my pretty little bird, soon you'll be the bride of Voltan the Mighty. But suppose you give me a little kiss while we're waiting for the High Priest, eh? Come here.
Oh, no! Don't touch me!
What? You repulse me, Earth Girl? Come here.
Keep away from me, you fat fool. Lass, darling.
Take your hands off her, Bolton.
Oh. Yes.
With a yell of fury, Flash drives his fist to Bolton's jaw. The mighty king staggers back and, bellowing like a mad bull, sinks his steel-sinewed fingers into Flash's throat. His left hand reaches for his dagger.
Flash, look out for his dagger.
A smashing left and a crushing right-hand uppercut would have killed an ordinary man, knocks Voltan into unconsciousness.
That settles that off. Dale, did he hurt you?
No. Oh, my darling. I feel so safe in your arms. They're so strong, yet so tender.
These arms were meant to hold you and protect you. By heaven, they will, as long as I have life.
My dear. Oh, where are Baron and Zarkov and Thune?
Zarkov and Baron are working on some scientific gadget. Thune and I separated looking for you. Come, we'll join him.
Did you kill Voltan?
I don't know. There's no time to waste finding out.
Which way do we go from here?
Look. Soldiers. Coming this way. Turn to the right, Dale. Down that other passage.
More soldiers. Flash, we're trapped.
Back to Voltan's quarters, Dale. We can bar the door and hold them off while we arrange to escape by the window. There. We're back in Voltan's quarters and we've escaped the soldiers.
Now.
Now they're firing, squad.
Voltan!
Why, you...
Stay where you are. They have this ray pistol trained on you. The slightest move and both of you will be blown to dust.
Don't hurt the girl. I surrender.
What's that? Light!
Light! Move!
Turn off the light!
Yes! The floor is tipping off!
Don't worry, Dale! I'll save you!
What is happening to the city of Hawkmen, perched so perilously 5,000 feet above the ground on the planet Mongo? What terrifying experiences await our friends? Be sure to listen in again next week for the continuation of the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon. And now, goodbye until next week at this time, when we'll be back with another amazing interplanetary adventure of Flash Gordon.
Finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to the Old West. And the unusual story of a merciless professional killer, as Ernest Haycox tells it in Wild Jack Rhett.
Red Mesa. A little town springing out of the hot, dry prairie beside the Chisholm Trail. A saloon, a hotel, two general stores, and a tiny church where the decent citizenry might pray for salvation while a wilder element, trail driver and teamster and buffalo hunter, restlessly searched out friend and enemy along the dusty main street. A small hill rose on the western edge of Red Mesa, plagued with a rash of graves, some marked and cared for, others sinking and forgotten.
Man that is born of woman hath but a short time to live and is full of misery. He cometh up and is cut down like a flower. He flieth as it were a shadow. While we're praying, a couple of you boys start throwing some dirt on the sheriff. O Lord, with whom do live the spirits of them that be dead, and in whom the souls of men?
And that same evening, a committee of the leading citizens of Red Mesa gathered together at Mayor Wayne's home to decide upon a new sheriff.
All right, gentlemen, sit down and let's get this settled. Gentlemen, to make this town a decent place for our women folk and children, we've got to have a sheriff Todd Mallon and his kind can't kill. We need the toughest gunfighter available. And I want to propose...
Just a minute, Mayor Wayne. Let me speak.
All right. Go ahead, Boy Allen.
I don't think we should get all upset just because we lost another sheriff. Jim Speed worked out fine for Red Mesa. All we need is another sheriff just about like him.
I expected that, Boy Allen. Huh? All you look out for is to keep that saloon of yours full of anybody who'll buy whiskey and gamble. I still propose we... reform this town by sending for a man some of you may have heard of. Jack Rett.
Gentlemen, I do want my saloon full. And full of the only men who'll bring any money at all into Red Mesa. Cowpunchers coming up the Chisholm Trail with Texas cattle. Thirsty men on the prod from a long drive. But you give them Jack Rett instead of a little fun, and this town will go broke.
We'll chance that, Boy Allen. We'll chance that.
What about Matt Travner? What's he got to say?
Mm-hmm. I have nothing to say, gentlemen. As U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district, my job is strictly outside Red Mesa. You run your town any way you like. I'll handle the surrounding territory.
Know anything about Jack Rett, Travner?
Just by reputation. Professional town tamer. And I've heard he's the most cold-blooded killer ever drew a gun.
Travner's right. We can't afford a man like that here.
Let's put it to a vote, gentlemen. All in favor of sending for Jack Rett, raise their right hand. 5-1. The matter is settled, gentlemen. Good night.
Yeah, good night.
Good night, Wayne.
You'll wait and see Mary, Travener?
If you don't mind, Mayor.
Of course. Sit down. She'll be out in a minute. Well, poor Helen was pretty mad. But after Jack Rett is here for a while, at least there'll be less gunfighting.
Be less anyway if Todd Mallon were out of the way. He sets a bad example. He's a hard man to catch.
Well, it was all you can, Travner. There's just too much territory around here for Mallon and his gang to lose themselves in. He'll have to be taken by a town officer. And I think Rett is the man to do it, if Mallon comes to town again.
He'll come, Mayor. The word gets out that Red is sheriff here. Mallon will have to face him or lose his reputation with his own men.
Oh. Good evening, Father. Hello, Matt.
Good evening.
Hello, darling.
Well, Matt Travner, aren't you going to kiss me?
Of course, sure. Here.
Mary.
What a shameless wench you are.
Oh, Father, you're old-fashioned. After all, we're engaged.
Your mother, God rest her soul, didn't behave like that when we were engaged.
The war changed things, Father.
I know, but not for the better. Well, I'm off to bed. Don't stay up too late now. Good night.
Good night, Father. Sir. You look worried, Matt.
Do I?
Tell me about it.
Well, it's just that they're sending for a new sheriff, a legal killer named Rett. He has quite a reputation, and there'll always be men to challenge it.
That means more gunfighting. Is that it?
I'm afraid so. It's a bloody way to peace, Mary.
I know. Let's not worry about it now. Come on. I'll fix some coffee for us.
Three weeks later, while Jack Rett rode into Red Mesa, he was 38 and at the peak of his reputation. He stood well over 6 feet, better than 200 pounds of plain sinew. Tawny blonde hair grew long in the frontier style, and his features, fair and tinted like a girl's, were boldly aquiline. He was a picturesque man, till one looked at his eyes, which were large and pale blue, and had the disconcerting trick of remaining too steadily on people. There was to be seen in him the suggestion of inhumanity. He sent word to the committee that he'd meet him at the mayor's office that evening.
There, it's 8 o'clock now. Where is he?
He's in town, and that's bad enough.
Dear sport, Bo Helen. We took a fair vote on Rhett.
Here he comes now.
My name is Jack Rhett. I have your offer.
I'm Peter Wayne, mayor of Red Mesa. Do you accept it?
Depends on what you want. Tell me.
Rhett, this is a difficult town. Chisholm Trail lies just across the river, and we get most of our money from the riders passing through with Texas cattle. Now we want them to have a decent time for their money, but we don't like a lot of gunplay and killing.
I've always been accustomed to complete authority, Mayor. I presume to know my job, and I won't have interference.
That's agreed, Rhett. By the way, the last sheriff had a rule that riders leave their hardware at his office. He had trouble enforcing it.
A poor rule. Let them pack their guns.
That gives the wild ones a fair chance at you.
I never give a man a fair chance at me. Is that all, gentlemen?
Bo Helen's saloon was the usual deadfall, with a huge bar along one side of the room and gaming tables toward the rear. Next morning, Bo Helen stood tapping the mahogany of the bar with his fingertips, staring thoughtfully at nothing.
Good morning, Bo Helen.
It's noon, Samus.
Huh? Oh, sure. Draw me a beer, Mike. Yeah. Where's the new sheriff, Bo Helen?
Over there at the corner table. Came in just before you did.
Huh?
Barkeep, bring me a cigar and a glass of rye.
Yeah. Now he's going to clean and reload his 6 guns, one at a time.
By golly, he is. How'd you know?
It's an old gunman's trick to impress the citizens.
But there's no one here except you and me.
Then it's to impress me.
Goodbye, Bo Helen, Mike.
You've got something to say to me, Bo Helen?
Yes, I have. You're smart, Red. I recognize that. But your record for killing is too severe, and my business depends on an open town. Now the reform element got you, and I'll go along for now. But just remember one thing. I can break you, Rhett, any time.
I was waiting for that, Bo Helen.
Well, and I guess we understand each other.
Hello?
Oh, any luck, Matt?
Just a morning's ride.
Matt, here's Jack Rhett. Rhett, this is Mac Travener, U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district.
Glad to know you, Rhett.
You're young.
Don't be misled. Rhett, your job is in town, mine is everything outside. So I'll either back you up here in Red Mesa or leave you strictly alone.
I'll handle Red Mesa.
All right. One more thing. I want Todd Mallon. If he comes to town again, he'll have to be taken. Will you do that or shall I?
What is he?
Outlaw. Main line is plain robbery. Now I want him for killing Jim Speed.
Let me handle Mallon.
Why?
Killing's my trade. Man doesn't live with enough animal instinct to get me.
Maybe. Killing you would build a man's reputation considerable.
Just so?
Well. Good luck, Rhett.
There was peace for a full week in Red Mesa. And then on Saturday night, Matt Travers' prediction came true. Jack Rett was at his customary post just opposite Bo Helen's saloon, in a chair on the porch of the Chinook Hotel, obscured by the shadows and watching the crowd, his cold, pale eyes half concealed by cigar smoke. Trouble found him thus.
Evening, Sheriff.
Good evening, ma'am.
Keeping an eye on the boys, huh? Oh, shoot!
Where's the sweat that used to be in Abilene? Where's he hiding? Where's that great man, Wild Jack Red? Bring him out!
Hello, cowboy.
I don't believe it. He's got a shadow.
That's a lot of killing for one, Sheriff. Three men. I don't like it.
Forget it, friend. Have a drink and forget it.
You're Bo Helen, ain't you?
That's right. Come on now, have one on the house. Now, Mike, fix him up.
I can pay for my liquor.
Yeah,
man. You never gave him a chance. What kind of sheriff you got stands in a shadow and kills one man and then jumps 50 feet from his gun flash and shoots down two more? Those boys never had a chance at him.
Drink your drink, cowboy.
That was the most merciless killing I ever seen. He's a butcher. I wish I'd gunned him. Up!
This is my game. They were fools to play it. Never buck a man who's spent his life learning to kill, son. Get out of town. Get out now.
Red, what if I'd...
Don't try it, son. Don't let your anger destroy you. Drift. Go on. Drift.
Blast your town. I can hold my thirst another 200 miles up the trail. Come on, boys. Yeah. We'll send word back to Texas to go around, Red Mason. Let it dry to powder.
Yeah, sure will.
It won't do, Red.
It'll do, Bo Helen.
Barkeep, bring me a glass of rye. On the house.
Rhett stood with his back to the bar, holding his drink and a thin black cigar carefully in one hand. He stood there for about 10 minutes. Then trouble came again.
Todd Mellon, he's riding in with four men.
Close the gates. Open up the back doors.
Well, Jack Rett, now let's see you shoot down Todd Mellon and four men from the shadows.
Good night, Bo Helen.
Escape, under the direction of Norman McDonald, returns in just a moment. Sorry, but if you think school teachers have it easy, you've got another think coming. Just ask Our Miss Brooks, as played by Eve Arden, on most of these same CBS stations this evening. And now, back to Escape.
When word came to Bo Helen's saloon that Todd Mallon was riding into Red Mesa with four men, Jack Rett simply walked out, crossed the street to his office, sat down and waited. 20 minutes later, Todd Mallon had arrived and departed. Not a shot fired. Then Jack Rett went quietly to bed. But early Sunday morning, he was back in his office.
Come in.
Morning, Rhett.
Well, Travner?
There's talk, Rhett.
I expect that.
Now, Rhett, you told me you'd handle Mallon if he came to town.
Yes, Travner.
Well, they say Mallon rode into town last night with four men, rode right up to this office, got down, came inside.
that you and he stood here with this desk between you talking. And that a few minutes later, Mallon left and rode out of town.
I play the game my own way, Travner. And I don't want interference from anybody.
People are saying maybe you and Mallon made a deal of some kind.
Well, now, somebody's breaking the Sabbath. Know who it could be, Travner?
No, I don't.
Well, it's a rifle. Sounds like one of those seven-shot Spencers.
And it's old Hack Crow.
Who's he?
An old trapper. Comes to town every few months, sells his furs, gets drunk, goes a little crazy. Jim Speed always laid him away in jail to sober.
Yeah, I'll take a look.
You better stop him, Red.
He's only got two shots left. That'll satisfy him. I doubt if he'll reload.
And if he notices us and decides to shoot?
Then I'll have to kill him. Hey, Who's that coming out of Bo Helen's?
Ewald Bay, gambler.
He's a fool.
Now he's getting his horse. You gonna stop him, Rhett?
No. Let him go.
Rhett, the town is your territory and I won't interfere. But why did you refuse a fair shot at Hack Crow? Ewald Bay is dead.
Which is the more useful citizen, Travner? Crow or Bay? West is full of gamblers.
There was considerable talk that day in Red Mesa over Jack Rett's aloof and cruel calm in condoning a shooting that had occurred under his very eyes and within reach of his formidable guns. Then, mid-afternoon, a rider came up from the prairie and reported finding old Hack Crow dead in a coulee. Dry gulched and robbed. Mayor Wayne heard about it and went to Bo Helen's saloon to hear more.
Good evening, Mayor.
Hello, Bo Helen. Shot of brandy.
And what do you think of your great Jack Rett now, Mayor?
Looks bad.
Now look, Mayor. Everyone knew Hack Crow carried his profits in his pocket. Always did that. So Rett allowed him to leave, and Todd Mallon and his men were waiting for him in the coulee. Simple as that.
You have no proof of that, Bo Helen.
No? And why didn't Rhett take Mallon when he rode in here last night? Because they made a business arrangement, that's why.
Well, it doesn't look good, but... Shh! There's Rhett now.
Barkeep, glass of rye.
I don't want to talk to him yet. I'm leaving. Good night, Bo Helen.
Good night, man. Mike, give me that rye. I'll take it over to the sheriff myself. Here's your drink, Sheriff. Mind if I sit down?
Game never changes, Bo Helen. I know what you're going to say.
I warned you I could break you, Rhett.
It's an old story to me. Every town's got one insider who plays along with the outlaws. And I knew you to be that one here when I first saw you. Running a saloon, you'd know when a cattle buyer was riding out of town carrying specie. When the overland stage was loaded with gold. There was a quarrel over the split of profits between you and Mallon. And you fell apart. That's always the way.
Very shrewd, right?
It's an old story, Bo Helen. I know it by heart.
Very shrewd. But you can't play the same game.
All sheriffs are supposed to be crooked.
You and Mallon had an agreeable little chat last night. Did he make you a good offer, Rhett?
Maybe I should accept his offer, Bo Helen, just to keep you two split. Maybe I should do that.
Rhett, I've seen sheriffs come and go. It's a chancy trade.
Sheriffs die. They all die. It's only a question of time.
You're a hard one, Jack Rhett.
You might make your peace with Mallon. It'd have to be that way, otherwise you'll have little chance of getting rid of me, Bo Helen.
It may be that way.
I wouldn't be surprised. I always expect the worst of men, and am seldom disappointed.
It was turning dark as Jack Rett left Bo Helen's saloon. Crossing the street, he walked into his office, but continued on out through the back door. A few minutes later, he stood in the gathering shadows opposite the OK stable and watched Bo Helen ride out and drift into the prairie to the south. He knew now what to expect. It would happen soon, perhaps tomorrow. He returned to his office and slept the night there.
I'm in. Well.
Morning. Brett, I want you to meet Mary Wayne.
Miss Wayne, very proud.
I wanted to know you.
To meet him, Mary, not to know him. Brett lives in a closed world.
See that? I have no friends.
Oh, we're to be married on Thursday, Mr. Brett. I should like you to be there.
I'd be most happy. Thank you.
Now, Mary, would you wait outside? I got some business to discuss with the sheriff.
Of course, ma'am. But don't be long. Goodbye, Mr. Ray.
Bye, Miss Wayne.
Brett, this afternoon I'm leaving to find Todd Mallett. You had your chance, but you let him go.
Wait, Travner. Wait.
I've tried patience, Brett, and I'm a poor hand at it.
Travner, you have a fine girl. If it's not presuming, let me congratulate you and compliment her.
Thank you. Was that all?
I'll take care of Mallon. Give me a little time. It's my job.
Retta, I want to believe you.
No man wearing a star should believe anybody. It's a weakness. Haven't I told you?
Blessed if I quite understand you, Retta.
And understand this. Every man has his time. When it comes, he knows it. There's no turning back. Nothing makes any difference then except to stand up to the finish and go out in decent style.
And yet you're the man never believes in giving another man a break.
Don't try to understand me.
You want help with Mallon?
I have no faith in help.
Mary?
Coming, Mary.
Wait, Travner. I'll suggest this much. Take one man. Ride due north to where the cattle trail crosses Tempest Creek. Be there tonight. Understand?
Red, I'd hate to oppose you.
If you did, you'd lose. I've been 15 years at this, Travner, which is 5 years beyond average luck.
That evening, Jack Red took up his post on the porch of the Chinook Hotel, dressed in his best. A hard white shirt, a blood-red Windsor tie, and a suit of black broadcloth swelling around the big, uncompromising shoulders. He sat there calm behind the smoke of his cigar, waiting.
Full moon tonight, Sheriff.
That's right.
No offense, mind you.
Good evening, Red.
Hello, Mayor Wayne. Mayor, have you seen Travner?
He rode north this afternoon. He'll be back tomorrow, he said.
Good.
Where's the sheriff?
Here I am.
Brett, listen, I just come up South Creek and Todd Mallon and six men were only a quarter mile behind me, heading into town.
All right, friend. Take cover.
Yeah, sure.
Brett stood up and moved into the shadow at the end of the hotel porch. Across the street, Bo Helen appeared in the full glow of the doorway of his saloon.
I'm out in the dark to meet your prince, Jack Rat. What are you afraid of? It's only Mallon riding in to see you.
Thieves fall out, but the urge for profits brings them together again.
You should have known it, Rat.
Nothing surprises me.
Well, there you are, Red. Surprised to find you exposing your great reputation out there in the middle of the street.
Every man has his time. You want to try it, Bo Helen? Or will you wait for help?
I'll wait.
The arriving horses came up into the moonlit street and halted at the corner of the saloon. Bo Helen's hand lifted toward the group. and at that order, the horsemen spread out until they were plank to plank all across the street. Todd Mallon advanced from the line and stopped, square and alert above the saddle. Jack Rett stood alone in the middle of the street, his eyes flashing a hard fury. Then he dropped his cigar and ground it beneath the boot. It was a final gesture.
How are you, Mallon? Goodbye, gentlemen.
Next day, Red Mesa buried some more men out on the hill and talked of Jack Rett, who was more of a mystery to them now than when living. To all of them but one, Matt Travner.
Nobody knows a killer's world, Mary. Wasn't any room in Jack Rett for much pity. But he sent me away to save me from what he knew was coming. I think that was a kindness, although I had no fear.
It was a fine thing for him to do, Matt. But they say he stood in the middle of the street to face them all in the moonlight. Why? It wasn't his style.
As long as he was sure of himself, he never gave anybody an even chance, Mary. But killers live and die by instinct. And somewhere along the evening, he got the warning. After that, it was just a matter of pride. He killed Mallon and Bo Helen before he died, standing up and in good style. And that's sort of a greatness, isn't it?
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you Wild Jack Rett by Ernest Haycox, especially adapted for radio by John Meston. Jack Rett was played by John Daner, with Larry Dobkin as Matt and Lou Krugman as Bo Helen. Parley Bear was the narrator. Featured in the cast were Junius Matthews, Russell Simpson, Gene Bates, Paul Dubov, and Sam Edwards. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Ivan Dittmars.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Omo...
John Steed bent down and examined the body of Yule, the stockbroker.
Look, Mrs. Beale, the waistcoat pocket.
Ripped away completely.
Yes. He was planning to come to dinner at Henry Boardman's, but he was dressing, evening dress.
He'd been dead about 3 hours, about the time we started dinner. So that eliminates 3 suspects.
Boardman left us to make a phone call, remember?
You think he might have been calling one of his minions?
That's quite possible.
What do you make of the Boardmans?
Bluff, conservative, die-hard traditionalist. Now, she... attractive, intelligent, expensive...
And as cold as ice.
And promiscuous.
Promiscuous?
Oh, beyond that, my lips are sealed. After all, a true gentleman...
A true gentleman shouldn't know of a lady's promiscuity.
Odd, though. Despite the air of studied wealth, I get the impression that the Boardmans are...
coming down in the world?
Objet d'art diminishing rapidly. No country house. It doesn't make sense. If Boardman's involved, then why send me to Yule? I mean, why put me onto his own broker?
Because he knew Yule would report back to him?
Yes. Yes, you could have just hit it, Mrs. Peel. Obviously, he did report back. And it caused his death, didn't it?
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 4 of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel continue to dabble in high finance, unaware that someone in the city is preparing yet again to dial a deadly number. John Steed, leaving Henry Boardman's exclusive dinner party, had had a most unpleasant experience in the garage at the base to the penthouse. Two black leather-coated thugs on motorcycles had tried to run him down. One of them had died when his bike crashed into a packing case. The other had got away. Mrs. Peel, arriving on the scene, was able to give a little sympathy to Steed and suggested that they went back upstairs to the Boardmans. Steed preferred a quick visit to his broker, Brian Frederick Yule. Yule was dead. It seemed he'd died in exactly the same way as Todhunter. Steed had a lot to think about.
A lot to think about, Mrs. Peel.
Including Ruth Boardman?
How did you guess?
You must have some evidence of her promiscuity. Other than first-hand experience, of course.
Oh, you flatter me. Yes, ever since I met her, I've been wondering where I'd seen her before. It was when I was lunching in the bar of the Bull and Bear. She was there, drinking with Ben Jago. She left before I went over to Jago. Strange. Odd relationship.
I can't think why. If Jago's one of Boardman's best clients, then it would be natural they should meet somewhere sometime.
Yet their attitude to each other seemed to be more than friendly, shall we say? I'd be prepared to bet that Henry Boardman doesn't know a darn thing about it. Well, it's just another thread in the mysterious tapestry. We'll both meet them all again very shortly.
Oh? When?
This wine-tasting do we've both been invited to in the cellars of the bank, remember? I'm quite looking forward to that.
The atmosphere in the wine cellars that Tuesday night was rather like a church. Elderly imbibers walked to and fro down the racks of cobwebbed and crusted bottles. John Harvey approached Mrs. Peel.
Which part of Barbados are you from, Mrs. Peel?
Do you know the island, Mr. Harvey?
I have a client who has a tobacco plantation there.
Oh, that'd be the south end of the island.
Yes, I believe it was.
Yes, I was at the north, among the non-smokers.
Ah, Mrs. Peel, good evening. Sparkling, refreshing, but a little on the frivolous side.
I am.
The wine, this Veuve de Velay. Would you like to try some?
Thank you. You know, I've got mixed feelings, Steed. Venerable yet devious. Ambivalent. It's not clear to me.
And the wine?
No, the Boardmans. Hmm. Everyone's friendly enough, but I get the feeling we're not trusted. Do you know what I mean?
I certainly do. I haven't really been trusted since Eton.
Steed, I'd like you to try this.
Oh, only if you'll do first service to me. Try this one.
Yeah, of course. An old friend, but not at his best. Latour 59.
10 out of 10.
Now, you tell me all about this.
Served on a silver tray, eh? I think you're trying to trap me.
Trap you? Now, why should I want to do that? Now, come along, taste it.
Steed lifted the glass, sniffed the wine, and allowed it to touch his lips.
I think we have him, John.
Well, Mr. Steed, your opinion? Well, it's either a 65 Algerian red... Or it's a Chateau Lafite Rothschild.
Yeah, that's better. Ah, but what year, Mr. Steed?
It's an old bouquet. Old, very old.
As though seeking back in the memory of time, Steed reached automatically in his pocket for his old Hunter watch. He said, looking at the time...
Pre-1418 war, rare vintage. Pre-1914 and yet no earlier than 1880.
Yeah, well, that still leaves you 34 years to play with, eh? Well...
1908?
Boardman looked pleased.
Would not be the year, no. Yes. 1909 from the northern end of the vineyard.
Yeah. Remarkable, Steed.
You have an extraordinary palate, Mr. Steed, for a... what is it you do? Taste wines, what else?
You must have spent years in France.
No, merely an extended leave in Bordeaux. Guest of a former Minister of Agriculture. It rained non-stop. This left us time to enthuse over the achievements of his cellar rather than speculate on the uncertainties of the harvest. End of story.
I see.
I hope when the time comes you'll be equally forthcoming. Do you mind if I pass on? I am enjoying this, sir. See you.
What Steed didn't know was that the whole scene in the cellar was being reflected upon a closed-circuit TV screen in a workshop not far away. A white-coated worker, Fitch, the resident genius of Warner's answering service, watched Steed at his wine-tasting triumph. When it came to the part where Steed consulted his gold watch, Fitch grinned and opened a drawer. He reached in and rummaged about until he extracted a Hunter watch identical to Steve's.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly the same.
Fitch took up a long, thin blade and opened the back of the watch.
Should be easy. Dead easy.
Don't like that word dead, Steve. Better watch that watch. In the Boardman's parlor, Emma Peel was learning from John Harvey a little more about the art of big business investment.
Investment's not only a question of what to buy, Mrs. Peel, it's a question of when.
Buy when they're friendless. Isn't that what they say?
That's quite right, but who can tell when that is? Oh, excuse me. Yes?
Mr. Harvey and Mr. Warner to see you. This is from the answering service. He has a parcel for you.
Oh, yes, that's right. Show him in, please. I won't be a moment, Mrs. Peel.
Harvey got up and walked the length of the long parlour. Mrs. Peel leant back in her chair, concealed from the door, and watched as Warner entered.
Good afternoon. I was on my way. Another two calls to make, so I thought I'd drop this in. It's all there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Warner. Very kind of you, John.
Warner left, and Harvey came back to the desk, carrying a parcel.
A consignment of new securities?
No, just a line Henry's trying to push amongst his friends, hoping they'll become interested and invest in the company. Oh, here, I'll show you. You may be interested.
Harvey tipped the contents of the parcel out onto the desk. They were the bleeper type of transistor receiver.
Oh, yes, I've seen these in work at hospitals. Ingenious.
Ready for some tea, Mrs. Peel.
Oh, what a nice idea. Thank you.
This way, then. Come along, John.
Thanks.
Time for tea. Right.
Mrs. Peel followed the two men into the other office. The door closed. A few moments later, Ruth Boardman entered the parlor cautiously. She walked up to the desk, ignored the bleepers, and searched amongst the wrapping paper. Eventually, she found what she was looking for. She unfolded the tissue paper.
Here it is. A gold Hunter watch. The replica of John Steve's.
Later that night in his flat, John Steed was setting his watch to the chimes of Big Ben. Having done this, he carefully arranged his tie. Standing in front of the mirror with the contents of his pocket on the occasional table, he checked.
Change, change. Keys, keys. Handkerchief, handkerchief. Doorbell, doorbell.
Coming!
Oh, Mrs. Boardman. And looking like someone straight off the Champs-Élysées.
Thank you, Mr. Steve. May I come in?
Please do.
Your apartment is much as I imagined it.
The very fact that you imagined it at all intrigues me.
I have come to thank you for your tact. The fact that you saw me lunching with a younger man. But you see, when your husband is so many years older than you are...
Oh, I understand.
The fact that you are even seen with a well-known, almost infamous character like Ben Jago, well, it could easily be misunderstood, misinterpreted.
Mrs. Boardman moved to the table that contained Steve's things.
Oh, think nothing of it, Mrs. Boardman. You're a merchant banker's wife. Mr. Jago is an investor. It seems a perfectly natural liaison.
As I said, you are very tactful.
Oh, not tactful. Optimistic. You see, I always admire a woman with a past.
What is optimistic about it?
Well, just the hope that history can be persuaded to repeat itself.
I think you'd better offer me a drink, don't you, John?
Of course. Make yourself at home, Ruth.
And give her a heaven-sent opportunity to switch those watches. Not very bright tonight, Steed, are you?
Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers, brought to you by the makers of Cold Water Omo.
Have a good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.